Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Holly Wise, Secretariat Director for the Global Development Alliance of the U.S. Agency for International Development. And joining us in our conversation is Elise Stork.
Holly, in the past few years, we've seen social demonstrations against globalization, poor working conditions, environmental pollution, etc., all associated with aspects of free trade. From your experience at USAID, why do companies participate in strategic alliances against that type of backdrop?
Well, I think they are interested in being part of the solution. I think that the drivers for companies are varied. And one of our jobs in government is to understand our partners and understand what it is that is driving their interest in being in a strategic alliance with us or with anyone. And as I said, there's a whole spectrum of motivations for this kind of work. There are some companies who part of their core mission, who they are as a company, is very much about wanting to take care of their workers, both here and abroad, wanting to ensure that the environmental footprint that they leave is either not deep or a positive one. They want to ensure that they are part of a positive development in the communities in which they operate. And what they're doing is looking for those to partner with who have the ability to help them in formulating the right kinds of programs and implementing those programs. So they would suggest that they know something about their core business, but they may not know everything about community engagement in Indonesia, or they may not be too clear about how to work with local NGOs on a labor issue in one of the suppliers in their supply chain. And so they're interested in doing that for reasons of mission and of corporate social responsibility. Now, in addition, there are many companies that understand that they're under scrutiny and that they want to be very clear, for example, about their supply chain. It's not enough to stand up and say, we don't own those sweatshops. They have to and are interested in looking down the supply chain to understand the factory floor or the forest floor from which they take product and services, and are willing to associate themselves with those that can help improve the working conditions or the livelihoods or the, as I said, environmental and social aspects of their involvement in that community. There are many companies that also understand that to the extent that they can understand new markets and they can understand poor people as not a liability but an opportunity, it makes them more agile and competitive, and they will be ready to take up tomorrow's challenges. So they're willing to work in emerging markets with others who can help them understand those markets better and help them do the right thing with delivering products to the poor. There are companies that are very seized with understanding that the productivity of their investment rests on being able to minimize risk, the risk of either being shut down or being boycotted or being perceived as having bad products or being a bad company. So there are lots of drivers, and some of them are absolutely pure, and some of them are demonstrate enlightened self-interest, and I would suggest to you that there's nothing wrong with enlightened self-interest. And we need to accept the fact that companies need to make a profit, and the way in which we intersect with them is not to directly contribute to their profitability, but to find a win-win situation where we can work together to address global development issues.
Holly, in USAID's experience, what are some of the critical success factors for public-private alliances?
Well, I would guess that it's important to view these as relationships because that's what they are. And so it's the success of the alliances is based on having clarity of purpose. In other words, understanding why we're in it and why someone else is in it and what is going to be clear as benefit or gain from that. A lot of them rest on trust between organizations and, more importantly, trust between individuals. And so a lot of the work in this early alliance development has been to simply make friends with people that you didn't know before and try and create areas of understanding and then program resources together based on that. What we are realizing is kind of new terrain for us is in this relationship management and in taking the alliance seriously. There's a realm of governance that needs to be applied to it, needs to be figured out, and needs to be done well. And we don't have a lot of models for that in terms of these dynamic relationships that are beyond, for example, just a grant or a contract, something which is a resourcing instrument, but have lots of other aspects to them and lots of other complications and moving parts and players. And so what we are now doing is working hard on understanding some of these success factors and what characterizes good alliances that can change and move forward and meet the needs of all the participants. And what kinds of specific things like letters of understanding or memoranda of agreement, how often do you meet? How do you deal with power sharing? How localized are our alliances as opposed to having some headquarters or central role in them? And it's a great learning field, but I don't think that we're fully there in terms of knowing everything about these new relationships.
Well, continuing in that vein, what are some of the greatest challenges you've experienced in establishing and managing these alliances?
The greatest challenges for AID have been in recognizing and moving toward this as a different role for government, in understanding that the world has changed and that we need to adjust to this change, in seeing it as an opportunity. There is a lot of organizational and culture change that goes with that. That's really hard, and it's really long-term, and I would suggest it's really worthwhile. It's not just AID that's changing. I think that there are lots of other government agencies that are starting to realize that the big responsibilities they have go beyond that which just government can do, and they need to think of creative ways of aligning themselves with various private resources, private actors, in order to get the job done. So for me, the biggest challenge has been to look at the way in which, for example, we hire our staff, we train our staff, we promote our staff, we give incentives to our staff to recognize that this is their job and to have the skills to be able to lean forward in different ways, to protect them in terms of due diligence and screening and having the right mechanisms so that they can do this kind of work. To celebrate their successes, to tell their stories, to give platform for them to tell their stories, to be somewhat analytic in terms of what have we learned and what would we not want to replicate, and that which has been wonderful that we'd want to do a lot more of. And to fix some of the specific things in the way in which we do our business that in the absence of change would make it less easy for us to really surge in this new way. So it's things like clarifying regulatory issues, clarifying, changing some of our procurement practices, helping to seed champions in our different operating units that can support these new behaviors, and have messaging from our leadership that continues to help people understand why this is good, why this is useful, why this is an idea whose time is welcome, and why they would want to continue this kind of work in the future.
It's a very interesting point. Could the type of alliances we've been talking about be a model for others providing assistance, such as the United Nations? We'll ask Holly Wise of the U.S. Agency for International Development when the Business of Government Hour returns.